Oh, well, happy, happy Sunday, Redemption Church. Everybody have a good 4th of July. Nice, man. Our whole family went down to Bellevue, took the grandkids for their very first fireworks display extravaganza, and it was a blast, pun intended. So, had a good time all the way around, and the grandkids, we weren't sure, like, they might be freaked out and traumatized, you know, because they're like 2 and 4 and all this big bright noise and all that stuff. They just had a great time. And so love the 4th of July. And one of the things, I don't know about you, but I know when I get into this particular time of the year and you're seeing the flags and all the different pageantry and everything else, it kind of reminds you of like, yeah, man, America, you know, like it's us. And then you feel that sense of like liberty and freedom and permissiveness and all of that. And so I found myself kind of getting swept up in some of that this week. And I'm like, I'm going to come in on Sunday and I'm going to exercise my First Amendment right to the freedom of speech. I think that was Cindy Potter that said, uh-oh. So, no uh-oh. I just want to talk about the F word today, is all. That's it. Oh, she covered her face. I'm talking about the F word, man. I'm talking about using the F word. I'm talking about being permissive with the F word. And in all its variations, if you want to put an ER on the end or an ED or an ING, that's fine. If you want to put on the front end something really crazy like mother or father or brother or sister, you can do that. Now they're worried. Now, before you walk out of the room and go, man, what's with this church? Or you go, man, finally, somebody gave me permission to do this. I don't want you to do that either. I want you to understand that today is a holiday, right? So June 1st was a holiday. It was Canada Day. July 4th was our Independence Day. But if you look at the calendar, today is a series of other holidays. It is, for example, National Strawberry Sunday Day. It's kind of cool. It's also National Rock and Roll Day, which for those who like to rock out like me, that's pretty rad. It's National Dive Bar Day. So maybe afterwards you go check out a dive bar. It is World Chocolate Day. So for you chocolate lovers in the room, that's going to be for you. But today is also Global Forgiveness Day. The superior F word. Now you can relax. Oh, he's not getting us in trouble. All right. Talking about forgiveness, the supreme, most important, most epic F word in the world. And when I think about this holiday, I go, if there's anything the world needs, is Global Forgiveness Day. Right? It just does. You turn on the news and there's so much conflict and hatred and division and war and strife. I couldn't help but when I looked at the calendar and I was thinking about what do I do on the first Sunday of July, I'm like, I'm doing forgiveness because, man, our world needs it. But it's not just our world, right? Our communities need forgiveness. Our families need forgiveness. Our marriages need forgiveness. Sometimes our relationships with our kids need forgiveness. Sometimes our relationships with other Christians need forgiveness. And really, even this nature between us and our enemies or our foes, all of that needs forgiveness. And so this is such an important word. It's so critical. In fact, even just working through it this week, and I found myself just way more like immersed in this topic than I normally am on kind of prep times for Sundays. But I was thinking about it, and I was really like, I'm always trying to distill down what is the hardest thing that Jesus asks me to do, because I want to take that seriously. Because there's a bunch of stuff in the Bible that I'm commanded to do, and I've said this before, I would probably do them anyway because it's common sense, it's my nature, I get it, it's going to make my life go better, I'm not pushing back against that. Like I go, man, those are easy to embrace. Tons of things are easy to embrace. The two toughest things, I think it's to love your enemies. Like, that's hard. That's probably the hardest commandment, to love your enemy. And the other really hard commandment is to love somebody who has hurt you, to forgive a person that has wounded you. Those are the toughest. And as I thought about it even more, I realized that it's one thing for me to forgive somebody who hurts me. You know what's really hard? To forgive somebody that hurts somebody you love. Don't you find that's almost harder? Right? To offend me, that's one thing. To be offended on behalf of somebody that I love, though, that's the thing I sometimes struggle with. So if somebody does something to my wife, Ellen, oh man, that's where I'm fiery, right? You do it to me, whatever. I can work it through. You do it to her, though, man, I'm upset. And the same for her. She'll say that. Like, somebody says something to her, she's like, somebody says something about her husband, oh, hell hath no fury and wrath, right? Then a wife kind of scorned by the hurting of the one she loves. And so this is an incredibly challenging topic. And so I think in that, though, I realize that when we take those things seriously, when we lean in to trying to love enemies or forgive those who have hurt us, when we do that, it is perhaps the most potent way we see that say that Jesus matters to us, we take him seriously, and we care about what he's wanting to do in the world through engaging into those difficult-to-do things. And so today, it's kind of a deepish dive into the topic, but hopefully one that's also practical and understanding. It gives bandwidth for all of that. And so right now, I just want to remind you, we have an app, and in the app, there are notes that you can follow along with. But I'm just going to go ahead and pray. And I'm going to pray because I also know probably many of us in this room right now are going to be like, I'm wounded, and I don't know if I want to hear this, right? And there's going to be others that go, I've wounded somebody, and I don't know if I want to hear this. So we're all kind of in a similar boat, maybe in different ways. And so I'm just going to pray that we would be non-reactive, non-defensive, be able to absorb, soak, grow, and then from that, hopefully really live out what Jesus has us to live out. So let's go ahead and pray together. Jesus, I thank you that you ask us to do hard things. Like, if you just asked us to do super easy, simple things, man, it wouldn't be faith, and it really wouldn't be world-transforming. But the very essence of your kingdom is upside down and backwards. It's doing everything differently than the way the world does it. And if there's any two things that the world does a certain way, it's how we deal with enemies and it's how we deal with hurt. And so again, I know there's going to be a lot of wounds to go around. There's a lot of wounding that's gone around. And I just ask that your Holy Spirit would soothe and lovingly push and prod and mold and just help us. Help us to grow into that which you have called us to. And help us to love that you call us to do that. And so we ask for your unique grace toward us, a certain mercy that, again, just prepares us for the ground that we're going to cover today. And then from that, again, that we're looking at you through the whole journey. And so, Jesus, we love you and we thank you. We need you and we praise you in your good name. Amen. So right from the get-go, I want to acknowledge that today is a little bit like splitting the uprights right down the middle. And what I mean by that is that I understand that on this topic, there is a lot of spectrum that we may be dealing with in this. And so I'm not going to deal with this far end or this far end completely. It's kind of more right down the middle. But I think there's some principles that can apply even to the far ends of the discussion. Now, when I say far ends, I think there's some things that we tend to hold offense toward that, frankly, we know are trivial. Like, they're kind of dumb. Like, if it was anybody else, we'd be like, man, just get over it. Just move on, right? But in our little world, we just kind of hold on to it for whatever reason. And yet we know deep down inside, like, I just got to surrender and just stop being all dumb about that. And there's those, but I'm not really going to address that except to say, if you know it's dumb, just do the right thing, right? Like, that's pretty simple. Maybe not in your emotions, but, you know, kind of cognitively, that's right. There's another end of the spectrum, though. And that's really the thing where, you know what? You may be the victim of something that truly was terrible. You may currently be the victim of something that is sincerely awful in life. And in that, here's what I want to say. I still believe that for all of us, the way forward is moving toward forgiveness, even for the worst of the worst things, right? That's where we want to get. But I also want to acknowledge in that space that it also might require, as you're doing that, that you also need professional help and therapy to get to that place. That is completely okay and understandable, encouraged here at Redemption Church. You may be moving toward that place, and you also need some kind of law enforcement intervention. Good. Do that. You should. It's why it's there. Right? So we support that. It may mean that you're moving in that direction, but you also need some boundaries with regard to whatever's happened, right? You need to have some protective wisdom in place. It may mean that you're moving toward forgiveness and also separation. You're moving toward forgiveness and also divorce. There's all sorts of factors. I don't know the details. I don't know the scenarios. I just want to be clear that when we talk about this, sometimes it gets so just elevated as pie in the sky. It's like, get past your hurts and just carte blanche forgive blindly in every way. And that's not exactly what I'm trying to get at today. I'm still saying, yes, we want to move toward forgiveness. We want to be in that place. But there's also these other elements that we want to be kind of aware of, right? So I just want to say that in advance. So if you're sitting there going, but Matt, my story is, and it's something terrible, and then you're telling me to do this, and you're not being sensitive. No, man, I'm sensitive to that. I'm sensitive. I'm just kind of splitting the uprights on the topic of the day. But I want to start kind of in a foundational space, right? Kind of why I believe forgiveness can be a challenge for us. Because it is. Every one of us knows, right? When we've been in those spaces of life, it's sometimes very, very hard to roll in on this idea of extending that thing or asking for that thing. And I think there's a foundational reason. It goes all the way back to the beginning of the story. It's the first point in your notes if you're following along today. It's this idea that we were not designed, actually, for forgiveness. We weren't built for that cause. When you go to the very first page of the book of Genesis, that first piece of literature, on the very first chapter section, it tells us that we were made in the image of God. We, every single person, is an image bearer, right? That's who we are. And by being an image bearer, it both informs what we are and it throttles what we are. So it's telling us, hey man, you hold the same characteristics of God as far as character and imagination and creativity, all those things. We're not God, but we are modeled in that image. What that means is also there are certain things that we were not built to do. We were not built to sense or experience, right? We weren't meant for war or revenge or hate or selfishness or vengeance or resentment or conflict. We just weren't. We're modeled after a triune God, Father, Son, and Spirit, who for all eternity has had unity and community and self-reliance and interdependence and a sense of mutually generating love that never ends. So if we're image bearers, that means that was our design, that was our nature. So these other things then become foreign to us. So when we were built, we weren't built with the bandwidth to really emotionally navigate our brokenness. That wasn't indigenously like placed into us. No, this idea of dealing with our brokenness, it sort of has evolved with us since we became broken, right? And like evolution, it's kind of like blind and it's unguided. Like, you know, we're trying to figure out how we deal with all this angst and hurt and all these things in our life. And so again, I just go back to the thesis that we were not designed to experience what it means to be forgiven. We were not designed to extend forgiveness. We were not designed to receive forgiveness because it takes offense to have forgiveness. And when it was put together initially, there was not offense. That's Genesis 1, that's Genesis 2. Everything was sweet. But then you roll into Genesis 3. And to be fair, there's all sorts of stupid going on in Genesis 3, right? There is. There's deception, selfishness, blame, want, excuse, deflection. Sounds like a presidential debate right there in Genesis 3, right? But the essence is captured in the dynamic of our relational progenitors. Our relational progenitors are the first man and the first woman, right? When we just kind of dial into their thing, they're naked, unashamed, everything's bliss in chapter 2, they roll into chapter 3, everything comes apart. And if you were to look at the core of what we're dealing with ever since, it's found when God says to the woman, you will desire to control your husband, but he will rule over you. Just so we're clear, both of those are bad, right? They're bad. You want to control him, he wants to rule over you, right? That is the essence of the problem. That is the genesis of everything we deal with. The topic of the day, the reason we're dealing with this thing that we weren't built for is because we lost what we were built for, and now we have to deal with the baggage of our bitterness and our sense of control. And so now we're good at antagonism and resentment. We're good at ruling and controlling and bitterness and demanding fairness and being judgmental and saying, you can't cut in front of me and all these things, right? We've been excelling at that since Genesis chapter 3. We are excellent. We are excellent at hurting. We're excellent at hurting one another. We're excellent in feeling a sense of hurt by one another. We're awesome at that, right? And what this creates is what I'm calling the cycle of non-forgiveness. The cycle of non-forgiveness. And we all know it, right? It starts with you hurt me. You hurt me. Right? You did a thing, said a thing, didn't say the right thing, didn't do the right thing, whatever the thing is, you hurt me, and what does it lead to? I'm hurt by you then. You sent a volley my direction, and I received that. You somehow inadvertently or intentionally wanted to do a thing, and now it's in my lap, and so I am hurt by you. So what do? I turn, and I want to hurt you. Now, to be clear, what I mean by this is it might be overt or covert, right? So it may be I'm hurting you by simply ghosting you. I'm hurting you by ignoring you. I'm hurting you by slandering or gossiping about you to other people so I can kind of undermine you. Or at least in my head, oh man, I am chewing you out and dragging you down constantly, all the time, replaying it over and over and over and over. And sometimes it's just flat out, I'm gonna hurt you. Right? That's all true. So I hurt you, and so what? Now you're hurt by me. And when you're hurt by me, what do you want to do? You want to, in turn, hurt me again. And so it's just a cycle. It's just a cycle that we find ourselves in. I mean, this is even why we see conflict around the world. It's called the myth of redemptive violence. If I just go to war with you, I can stop evil in this world. And it just pops up in another place, right? Because this is sort of what makes our world tick. But in our interpersonal relationships, when we get into that cycle, it just weighs us down. It weighs us down. And I was thinking about this kind of practically in my own life. One of the things I do in kind of my personal exercise regimen is I try to walk for 60 minutes a day with a 50-pound weighted vest, which is a drag. It's awful, man. Right? 60 minutes with 50 pounds, the entire time you feel the weight on your shoulders. You feel the pressure in your chest of 25 pounds here and 25 pounds here, and it's just pressing against you. And the entire time you're walking, you're just like, man, is this ever gonna end? Every second drags and drags and drags. 60 minutes feels like 60 hours with that dumb pack. But I think that's the same when we are wounded. And we then have all of this weight of hurt. It just dominates. You just feel it on your shoulders. You feel it in your chest. It bogs you down in life, right? And the only way you can escape that weightedness is you figure out, man, I've got to drop the weight. And the only way we can really drop the weight is this idea of forgiving. To really forgive, to move toward that place of forgiveness. Because the weight of our wounds runs deep, and sometimes some wounds, man alive, it is just a weight that even in some ways you may always feel like you're carrying some of it your entire life. I think that's totally okay. We'll get to that at the end. But it still means, hey man, I want to begin to address it as much as I can. And I think part of the way we address it is we recognize something about what God does toward us. And so that's the second thing in your notes. It's the divine example of forgiveness. We weren't built for it, and then we failed, but then God steps in, and he does this thing toward us, and so we look at his example. Part of the reason I looking at this example is because it puts us all into the same group. In other words, every one of us have been offensive, we failed, at least toward God. So we're all in the same category, right? And in that, we all needed this thing from God. And then God, by way of his example and his kindness and his goodness and his character, he extends this thing to us, and maybe we can learn from that thing. So in the book of Nehemiah, we see in chapter 9, he's doing what I call a preach prayer. And you're familiar with a preach prayer. If you've ever been in a prayer group and somebody's praying, but they're really preaching, right? You know that one? Like they're telling you a thing, as they're telling God a thing, but they're telling you a thing. That's what Nehemiah's doing. He's like telling God, God, you dummies, you better listen. Like it's that. He's preach-praying. And so in this, he's talking about the nation of Israel and they're leaving Egypt and the slavery thing. So it's hundreds and hundreds of years after that whole series of events. But he's reminding the nation that we are prone to be dumb. And so let's remember some things. And in the midst of his preach prayer, he says their ancestors, pretty much just like they would still be tempted to do today, they refused to obey and did not remember the miracles that you, God, had done for them. Instead, they became stubborn and appointed a leader to take them back to their slavery in Egypt. But, but you are a God of forgiveness, gracious and merciful, slow to become angry, and rich in unfailing love. You did not abandon them." So it's like they were ungodly and a mess. But you, God, man, you're one that comes in with forgiveness and grace and mercy and patience and love and loyalty. See, that's God's nature, right? Those things are his nature. And I bring this up because, again, most followers of Jesus will say that their ambition is to be godly in life. All godly means is to take what you see in God and duplicate that, like mirror the God thing. The godly is to mirror the God thing. And so if God is forgiveness and grace and mercy and compassion and love and loyalty, I want to, if I want to be godly, just do the very thing that I know God to do, especially toward me. And see, God models this even in the toughest of spots. I think about the Gospels, right? If there was ever a time where God could say, you know what, I'm done with this forgiveness thing, it would be in Luke 24, where he's like, no, they've gone too far. This is not going to happen, right? In fact, when humanity is at its greatest, most grievous time of offense, we see something in the spirit of the heart of God. It says, when they came to the place called the Skull, they nailed Jesus to the cross, and the criminals were also crucified, one on his right and one on his left. And then Jesus said in the midst of that, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." See, I think that really captivates me, because they're all kind of like stand-ins for the world in that scene. So you have the political powers, Rome. They're a part of this process. You have the religious institutions, both the far right and the far left, working in concert against Jesus. You have society at large, the crowds crying, "Crucify, crucify." And then even those who would be sort of like allies of Jesus, his disciples, they've split, man. So either people are abandoning him or they're trying to assassinate him and succeeding. And in the midst of all of that, where literally all of God's creation is just assembled in hatred toward God, Jesus says that. Like, if there's ever a moment where he could say instead, "Forget them, God, and judge them, for I am tired of all that they do," this is the moment. He could have said that. But instead, he leans into this idea of, no, forgive them because they don't realize what they're doing. See, I bring this up because while we tend to, as Christians, look at the cross and say, hey, that is the means by which I am rescued from my offenses, I go, absolutely, 100%. Peter also says, and it is the example that we are to live by when offended. Right? So it's both. Hey, that rescues me, but it also commands me. It calls me to a thing. It dictates how I want to move in my responses. So the cross is something we trust in, but the cross is also something we live out. Right? And that leads maybe to the third thing in your notes, the divine expectation of forgiveness. And the expectation is like, God's like, man, I've done this for you. I've forgiven you all your stuff, all the things you know, all the things you don't know, all the things everybody else knows, all the stuff only I know. He's like, I've forgiven it all. And if I've forgiven you, I want you to go and do the same thing toward others just as I have done toward you. In fact, Jesus lays this out in the Sermon on the Plain, which is kind of a mirror of the Sermon on the Mount, but it's in the Gospel of Luke, and it was our reading today. Do not judge others, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn others, or it will all come back on you. Forgive others, and you will be forgiven. Give, and you will receive. The amount you give will determine the amount you get back. Now, there's a number of things in there that are very interesting to me, but one of the things I find most intriguing, and to be honest, kind of sobering, is the quid pro quo feel of this whole thing, right? It's like Jesus is saying, hey, if you desire to be forgiven, then what you need to do is you need to be a forgiving person, right? It's like a match. If you want to sense it, if you want to experience it, if you want to have it extended to you, then you need to be extending this to the people around you. He's just flatly saying, like, the amount you pay out is the amount you're going to bank. I look at that and I go, man, that's hard, but that's sobering. Paul kind of just takes that same idea and runs with it. He's like, hey, if you want it extended to you, you have to be willing to extend it in the same way that it's been extended to you. In Ephesians 4, he says, instead of being bitey and bickery and bitter and belligerent, be kind. Be kind to each other, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, just as God through Christ has forgiven you. Just as, right? That's the bar. I didn't set it. I'm not an apostle. I just deliver the mail, right? That's it. But it's valuable, challenging, but valuable. Now, maybe at this point, kind of finding our way forward, this juncture of the talk kind of begs the question, how do you define forgiveness? Like, what exactly are we talking about when we throw this word around so much? Well, let's kind of break it down a little bit. If we look at the old English, it's actually a compound of two words, which is forgiven. Forgiven was the old English word. For means completely, right? So like to foreknow is to completely know, right? So for is completely, and given meant to give up. To give up or to give away. So it was originally used of the remission of debts or the pardon of offenses. And it was total. It was complete. There's nothing left to pay. Like, that's the heart behind the whole thing, right? That's our English equivalent. But when you go back into the New Testament, just the New Testament, the Old Testament is also just replete with the idea. But in the New Testament, there's about 250 occurrences of the word forgive and its variations. And it comes from four different Greek words. And so there's four different words communicating this idea. The first is apoluo. Apoluo means to release or to set free, to loose something. This is the word that Jesus uses there in Luke 6:37 that we just read. If you want to be released, you have to be willing to release, right? If you want to be set free from your mistakes and the consequence and the guilt and the shame of all, you have to do the same. Like, that's this idea of apoluo. The next is aphaami, which means to take or to send away. 1 John 1:9 says he is faithful and just to forgive our sins and to cleanse us of all unrighteousness. And here it has a throwback to the book of Leviticus, where there is this thing called the scapegoat, which is the weirdest thing because we throw that around today in our culture. We're like, hey, he was just a scapegoat. But back in the day, there was literally a goat, and the priests would take the proverbial sins of the nation, place it on the goat, and then send the goat into the wilderness, send it away, taking away the offenses, right? Leaving the people, but taking away the offenses of the people. And that's kind of the spirit of this whole thing. That's what it means to forgive. Next is charizomai. Charizomai means to pardon, to show grace or to show favor. This comes up in like Luke chapter 7. There's this beautiful story where Jesus goes to the home of a religious leader, a Pharisee. And while he's there, a prostitute shows up, which crashes a party, right? And she's there though, and she's so grateful for Jesus, and she's weeping, and she's wiping his feet with her hair and her tears. And the Pharisee is super offended, just super offended. So then Jesus tells a story about debtors, two different debtors, one that has a little debt, one that has a lot of debt, and how a king forgives them both. That's that word, right? It's this idea again of, man, I'm going to show you grace. You don't deserve the pardon. I'm going to give you the pardon anyway. And then the last word is aphesis. This means remission of a penalty. You know where Jesus uses this word? Very first communion. He says, this blood is the new covenant shed for you for the forgiveness, remission, pulling away of your sins. Again, it's remission of the penalty. I bring these four words up because, again, part of it is just like 250 times means it's kind of a priority in the New Testament, right? But I also bring it up because I think when you take these four words and you let them function as kind of like lenses, it suddenly gives us a sense of, oh, maybe this is how I should look at things and look at people and look at problems when they've affected me, and that it informs my actions and attitudes in relationship to the offenses. And so if I have hurt a person, I should be coming in thinking about these four words. What I am seeking of them is all of this. And therefore, I bring a kind of contrition, a kind of correctiveness to my own life, an openness and an acceptance that I have harmed you. And so I'm taking full ownership of what I've done. These words help us navigate when we're the perpetrator. But it also helps us navigate when we're the one that has been hurt, because now we know exactly what we're trying to get toward when it comes to showing this thing called forgiveness. In fact, I think if anything, the essence of forgiveness is the idea that says relationally, I will turn the other cheek, even though deep inside, I want an eye for an eye, right? I want an eye for an eye. I want my pound of flesh, but I'm going to choose to turn the other cheek anyway, because I'm not going to match offense with offense. I'm going to stop the cycle. I'm going to disrupt the pattern. I'm going to do something different and novel and new. Not just for your benefit as I forgive you, but for my benefit, so I'm not held in this prison of bitterness and resentment for how you hurt me. So I don't have the weighted vest on through the rest of my life or through the rest of this next year or whatever else. I want to do it different. Now, I want to be really clear. Ain't nothing easy about this. I just want to be open. Like, it's hard sometimes as like a Bible teacher, because you're like, here's the bar, right? And then here are all of us trying to hit the bar. It's tough. And like I said earlier, especially when it's offense on behalf of somebody that you care about, you is one thing, them's another. It's hard. It's all really, really hard, but it means embracing the challenge of forgiveness. That's number five in your notes. Embracing the challenge, because forgiveness is a challenge. Let's just be straight up with one another. It is a challenge. It's a challenge to reach it, and then here's the other thing. It's a challenge to maintain it, right? Like, you can be like, okay, I've forgiven them. Oh, they're making me mad, but I forgave them. Oh, but they're, right? We've all been in that space. In fact, it reminds me of like probably trying to pursue sobriety, or maybe pursue like being debt-free, or some kind of vice in your life, where you're going to start and you're going to fall off the wagon and get back and fall off the wagon. That's going to be normal, but hopefully you're moving increasingly to a place of kind of firmness in those things. I think because of that, forgiveness is probably way more likened to a journey than really a decision. And I think part of the journey is, let's be honest, when it comes to forgiveness, I can resolve in my mind it's the right thing to do. So it's one part just kind of intellectual, like, yep. But I think it's two parts emotional, right? And unfortunately, we don't have a lot of jurisdiction over those feeling things, right? It takes more time. So your mind can race down the road, but your emotions have to catch up. And then sometimes your emotions catch up to your mind on forgiveness, and then your emotions fall back, and they catch up, and they fall back, right? That's the journey element. But again, it still means we're trying to move in that direction. And so here's my encouragement. I'm even going to say very cautiously, here's what I'm giving you permission to do in the journey of moving toward forgiveness and embracing the challenge. When hurt, you're allowed to be angry. You're allowed to be frustrated. You're allowed to lament. You're allowed to unleash your inner ugly. You can go through all the stages of grief. If you've hurt somebody, you can be all sheepish and shy and embarrassed and, oh, if I go to him, I'm gonna look bad. You could go through all that stuff. You're allowed to go through that journey, right? And then you have to get to a point of saying, now I'm gonna start the process and I'm gonna embrace the challenge to either go and ask for it or go and give it. Like, we have to go into that space at some point. And not necessarily because they're so worthy of it. I wanna be clear here too. We don't forgive because people are so worthy of forgiveness. Most of us probably aren't worthy of forgiveness always. But we do it because Jesus is worthy, and he asks us to do this as his followers. He's like, it's important to me that you do this thing. In fact, there's a scene with Peter, this dude that was very prone to make enemies and then take a lot of offense at people. Like, he was good at being the offender and the offended all at the same time. And so he comes to Jesus and he says, Lord, how often should I forgive someone who sins against me? Should it be 7 times? And he says this looking for some credit, because elsewhere Jesus said, forgive 7 times. So I'm sure Peter's like, oh, I caught that, bro. I'm gonna come and I'll get some brownie points, extra credit. No wonder I'm gonna be number one among the 12, right? Like, so he goes, seven times, right, bro? And then Jesus is like, oh, Peter, that's right, seven times. No, 70 times seven, right? Just completely obliterates this seven idea. Now, again, I want to be clear. I don't think it's because somebody who offends you 490 times is super worthy of being forgiven, right? I don't think that's the idea that Jesus has. I think what Jesus is getting at is that when we do this thing that is so counterintuitive to the world, when we do this thing that is upside down and backwards in a world of grudge holding, when we roll in and instead of a grudge, we show forgiveness and we keep forgiving over and over and over again where the world never would, Jesus is like, yes, that's what my kingdom's all about. That proves that all of this stuff is legit. It's true. It is hard to manufacture this. You need divine intervention to live in that space. But I also want to be clear, it's not just for the overachieving followers of Jesus, like it's optional. Like if you could do this 70 times seven, awesome, but if not, it's fine. No, we're all trying to get there. In fact, at the end of the famous Lord's Prayer, which is really the followers of Jesus' prayer, Jesus would less pray this, we must more pray this. There's an additive at the end we tend to not put in our reciting. Like, our Father art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. And we walk through the whole thing, forgetting the very last end of that whole thing is, if you forgive those who sin against you, your heavenly Father will forgive you. But if you refuse to forgive others, your Father will not forgive your sins. I don't know why we don't recite that part, right? It's uncomfortable. I'll just, again, be open. As a Protestant, I don't know what to do with that. Throws me off a little bit. Like, theologically, I don't know. But I know that, hey, I better take it seriously. Because that's kind of how Jesus speaks. He repeatedly benchmarks this idea of you will receive to the degree that you give, right? So he said it earlier. If you show mercy, you get mercy. Compassion, compassion. Love, love. If you're not judging, you won't be judged. If you're not condemning, you won't be condemned. And then here he's like, and if you forgive, you're going to be forgiven. If you don't, you won't. He's like, this is just kind of the way it works. It's like God almost says, you know what? I'm going to do you a big favor. I'm going to let you set the standard by which I will assess you in the end, right? So if it's good enough for others, it's good enough for you. Right? So you set the ruler. If you show all these things toward others, God's like, I'm going to show that to you, toward you. If you refuse to do that toward others, I refuse it to do it toward you. Again, I don't know what to do with that theologically. I just look at this practically and go, hey, I want to take this seriously. I want to take it seriously. So what does it mean to take it seriously? Number six, being both principled and practical about forgiveness. I want to be principled, and I also want to be practical, because I do think there's an ideal principle. The ideal principle is found in the Sermon on the Mount, and it's the very first command of the Sermon on the Mount. So it opens with the Beatitudes, and then it says you're salt and you're light, and then from this, man, you got to let your righteousness exceed the righteousness of religion. And then he gives his first command after that. And the word righteousness in their world just meant doing right by God, doing right by others. And so Jesus is like, you want to know how you do right by God and do right by others? Here's the first thing you need to do. He says, you've heard that our ancestors were told you must not murder, and if you commit murder, you are subject to judgment. But I say, if you're even angry with someone, you are subject to judgment. If you call someone an idiot, you're in danger of being brought before the court, which I probably should be brought before a lot of courts. Just truth be told. And if you curse someone, you are in danger of the fires of hell. So if you're presenting a sacrifice to the altar in the temple and you suddenly remember that someone has something against you, leave your sacrifice at the altar and go and be reconciled to that person, then come and offer your sacrifice to God. And so again, this can kind of cut both ways. Hey, if you know you've wronged somebody, go make it right. If you know somebody's wronged you, go deal with that. Either way, it has to be dealt with timely, because again, this idea of bringing your gift to the altar shows repetition in life. You don't let it drag on for years. You go and you seek to be reconciled. And that word reconciled in Greek is two words. It's dia and alasso. Dia means thoroughly, and alasso means like change, right? A thorough change or a thorough experience. So you're going and saying, I want this to be flipped. We've had active negativity, and so I'm going to go and try to make active positivity out of this. I'm going to go from broken to healed and fixed. That's the objective and the goal. So just as repent means flipping your thinking, this reconciliation is flipping the nature of the relationship. That's the heart behind the whole thing. And so that's the true goal, right? And again, I think when we're trying to do that, we're trying to do the toughest stuff that Jesus asks us to do. But when we are, when we're either loving an enemy or forgiving somebody that's hurt us or asking forgiveness from somebody that we hurt, when we do that, I actually think it's the greatest apologetic the world could ever see, because again, we're choosing to do the toughest stuff. And we're modeling that this Jesus stuff is legit. Now that's the ideal, right? That's the ideal. But I think there's also some practical realities, and again, I'm tucking this in because I think it's really important in light of this to just acknowledge some things. Here's the thing you got to understand about forgiveness, though. You can forgive, and you can still acknowledge consequences, right? You can acknowledge consequences. Galatians 6, don't be misled. You cannot mock the justice of God. You will always harvest what you plant, or some versions say, you always reap what you sow. So I want to be clear. If we are the party that has hurt another person, right, we have to be okay with the fact that even though we're asking for forgiveness, even though they may forgive, we created consequences, right? And those consequences may be a lack of trust, maybe a standoffishness. There's things that we did that's on us. Those consequences don't go away. God repeatedly forgave Israel, and there was consequences. So we have to just be okay with that. We can't be like, why are you holding this against me? They may not be. It's just like, hey, you were dumb. Maybe you did something really, really bad. And now they kind of keep you at arm's length, even though they've forgiven you. That's just kind of the nature of consequence. I would also say that the person that has been harmed in some way, sometimes we continue to hold grudges where we shouldn't, but other times it is totally okay. Totally okay. Say, you know what? But I'm going to be cautious. I'm going to be wise. I'm not going to continue to be gaslit. I'm not going to be gullible. I'm not going to just be walked over because I said I forgive you and now you're taking advantage of the forgiveness. It doesn't mean that. It means, hey, man, you can forgive and still embrace that there's going to be consequences of things. With this, there's a second thing. You can forgive and have boundaries. Matthew 7, do not judge others and you will not be judged, for you'll be treated as you were treating others. The standard you use in judging is the standard by which you'll be judged. Familiar to us. But then he says something in verse 6. Don't waste what is holy on people who are unholy. Don't throw your pearls to pigs. They will trample the pearls and then turn and attack you. This is super weird in some ways. But what Jesus is saying is don't self-righteously judge, right? Don't do that. And don't use boundaries as a punishment. Don't use boundaries as vengeance. Don't use boundaries as retaliation, right? Don't be the superior judgmental jerk in anything. But equally, he says in verse 6, you can be judicious. Don't be judgy, but be judicious. It's okay for you to say, you know what? There's this person in my life, and I'm forgiving them, but they continue this pattern. And I am a good faith actor here, but they are exercising bad faith responses. They say, forgive me, and they go back, forgive me, go back, and I'm going to forgive them 70 times 7. But I'm also going to set up a boundary, not because I hate them, not because I'm punishing them, but because I know the best way for me to love them is to create some of that space. The best way to love them is to not get constantly entangled and more kind of brouhaha and problem, but to consciously say, and you have to verbalize the boundary. Like, I love you, this is the boundary. You can't just be like, I never told them the boundary, it's just my heart, right? You can't do that. You have to let them know this is what we're doing, but I think you can do that and still be forgiving. You can. I think it's important. And then third, you can forgive, and yet, you don't have to forget. You don't. I don't think that's critical. Now, I know in Jeremiah 31:34, God says to all creation, I will forgive their wickedness, and I will never again remember their sins. But frankly, I don't think that literally means God's going to be like, what? What was the Holocaust? Like, I don't think it's that. Right? Like I think what God's getting at there is like, I'm not going to hold against you your offenses. You're going to have my absolute love, my absolute loyalty, because that's God. But here's the thing. We're not God. We're not God. We're going to remember our hurts, right? We're still going to need to navigate our hurts through the course of life. And so I don't believe we can or must forget. I don't think that's the case at all. But we can and must love people even though we don't forget. And what does love look like? Love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. It doesn't demand its own way. It's not irritable, and it keeps no record of being wronged. A record of wrong is like a ledger. You owe me. You're indebted to me. Forgiveness can remember you hurt me, but forgiveness can't say, and you will keep owing me to the end of time. At some point, we just have to let it go. Is it hard? Yes. But is it better? Yes. I know in my own life, there has been some really awful things where I've been hurt in terrible ways. And when I just consciously decided, man, I'm gonna just love my enemy, I'm just gonna let this go, I'm gonna submit this to Jesus, I heal much faster than if I put the weighted vest on and I keep trudging through things and I don't address it and don't want to and keep letting it drag on. It just perpetuates the misery. And so I close with a word from Paul. He says, since God has chosen you to be the holy people he loves, you must clothe yourselves with tenderhearted mercy, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Make allowance for each other's faults and forgive one another, anyone even, who offends you. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. Here's my challenge today. Two challenges. First, if there's somebody in your world that has harmed you, and they're not coming to you, it may mean that at some point you have to go to them. Maybe they're intimidated, maybe they're hard-hearted. Here's what I find often. A lot of people are like, I didn't even know I did a thing, right? But you know there's a problem, and that's at Matthew 5. Go to them. I'm not saying today, I'm just saying at some point, working through in your heart, God, help me get to a place that I want to see reconciliation. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe on the flip, you're like, no, I know I hurt somebody. I know I hurt somebody, and I have not addressed that properly. I'm going to go do that. I'm going to move in that direction. Again, may not be today, but it's now on your plate. I want to start doing that thing. I want to start going where I need to go and doing what I need to do. The other thing I was thinking about, though, is there may be some in the room that you go, my biggest challenge is I haven't been forgiven by God. I don't follow Jesus. I'm not a Christian. I know I've not been doing life in a way that would please God. But he wants to forgive you. Again, we saw that. That's his character. Right? The cross is all about that. The resurrection is all about that. The life of Jesus is all about healing and saving and all of that. And so if you're here today or you're watching online and you're like, I want to follow Jesus, you just simply go, Jesus, forgive me. I know you came, you died, you rose to rescue, to change. You make that your prayer and your way with your words. He hears you, and we would love to know about that. I'll be out the door after this, and you can let us know. We have a tile on our app. You can click that and say, I made that decision. That'd be awesome. We'd love that. But for all of us, I want to just go ahead and close this in prayer right now. Jesus, I thank you that you don't let us off easy, right? Like, it's a challenge. It's the way you coach us. It's that push and praise. And I pray that in that, we embrace that at some level and in some pace, right? I don't expect everybody overnight to do everything right. Like, I don't at all. There's certainly still things in my life, people in my life that I could work harder at seeing better reconciliation. So I ask that you help all of us, be patient with all of us, give us grace, but also give us grit, maybe to seek those things. We thank you, Jesus. We need you and we love you in your good name.